In today's episode, how a plane crash in Russia changed Poland and its former Prime Minister, Donald Tusk. Plus, director Mike Lee on the Peterloo massacre.
My grandfather, Henryk, was at the cemetery taking care of my grandmother's grave, and he was approached by a drunk grave digger and asked, does he know what happened? What just happened? And my grandfather said, no, what happened? And the grave digger said, didn't you hear? Ruski fucked us good. What? They killed the president.
In 2010, a plane crash in Russia killed Poland's right-wing president, Lech Kaczynski, and plunged the country's centrist prime minister into a crisis. That man, Donald Tusk, went on to become president of the European Council, a key player in Britain's struggle to extract itself from the EU. On Sunday, he'll chair the critical summit on Brexit. But away from Brussels' neon-lit negotiating rooms, Tusk remains locked in a bitter feud with his political rivals in Poland. From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, what a tragic plane crash in a Russian forest tells us about Donald Tusk.
Hello. Hello, London.
Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
We started by giving The Guardian's Brussels bureau chief, Dan Boffey, a quick call.
You're in Strasbourg, not in Brussels as usual.
No, European Parliament. We come here sort of 12 times a year. And Donald Tusk is actually in Strasbourg giving us the latest. I try and get up here as much as possible. This horrible building in the middle of nowhere where all the MPs and commissioners and the bigwigs go, and they're trapped. So it's good hunting for a journalist.
Good hunting. How do you hunt down a politician?
Well, there's a big dining room in the middle of the European Parliament which has this fantastic buffet. It's like a seafood buffet. You've got crab claws and lobster tails and the rest of it. They tend to hang around there at 1 o'clock. So if you hang around there, you probably get some of them.
I've got this image of you hanging around by the lobster tails, waiting for Jean-Claude Juncker to come by.
It's happened before. Yeah.
So come on, tell me, why should any of us care about Donald Tusk?
I would say his job is to chair the big summits and try and make the compromises between the member states. And at the right moments, say something, do something to sort of change the debate, to change the logistics, to fix the problem.
And how popular is he with other European leaders?
Well, he was re-elected a year ago, and it was only one country that said no, and that was Poland. And that's because of this grudge, this sort of long-running feud. I think to really understand Donald Tusk, and this permeates through everything he does, including Brexit, you've got to look at where he's come from, and this sort of crucial moment in 2010, this plane crash, which the president of Poland died, Kaczynski. And that has affected his career throughout, and it affects his thinking today.
The president of Poland, along with his wife and some of the country's most prominent civilian and military leaders, were all killed when their plane crashed in Western Russia. Fire crews were quick to the scene Saturday, but there's little left for them to salvage as debris laid strewn across the field. Lech Kaczynski was flying to Russia to take part in ceremonies marking the 70th anniversary of the massacre of thousands of Polish army officers by Soviet secret police. Back in Warsaw, people have already begun flocking to the presidential palace to leave flowers and mourn.
Why there were no survivors. Only 3 days ago, Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin and his Polish counterpart Donald Tusk travelled to the same Kachin Memorial to commemorate the 20,000 Polish officers who were killed by Soviet security forces 70 years ago.
I read about this forest and I imagined this forest since I was a little girl. It's called often the Cursed Land. It's a beautiful, vast forest. Just thousands and thousands of trees standing tall like soldiers, very quiet. It's a beautiful place.
That's Polish-American journalist Agata Popeda. The plane crash killed everyone on board, including Polish MPs, military and religious leaders, and the country's president, Lech Kaczynski. The group had been on their way to a commemorative event in Russia.
I was never a fan of the president, but yeah, I was shocked. You know, it's a moment when effectively the whole government is being wiped out.
Today, the body of President Lech Kaczynski returned home from the site of the tragedy, his daughter kneeling on the ground in front of his flag-draped coffin, then later breaking down in tears. Poland's political, military, and religious leaders escorting the coffin along Warsaw's crowded street as Poland mourns. The investigation continues.
So, Agata, how did you feel hearing the news of the crash?
Everybody remembers where they were at the moment of the crash. That tells you something about the intensity of the reaction. I was in Washington, and I remember my friends calling me early in the morning. They woke me up to check if I heard about it.
Why was a plane filled with Polish dignitaries on its way to a forest in Russia?
They were going to Smolensk to commemorate the 70th anniversary of the Katyn massacre, which is an event, one of the most traumatic for Poles, when in 1941 the Soviets murdered 22,000 Polish officers and buried them in the forest.
В Смоленских лесах. В боевом содружестве действует советская гвардия, танкисты и пехотинцы.
Between 1941 and 1991, Moscow did not acknowledge that they were responsible for the massacre. You know, they claimed that Nazis committed the crime. So this crime was being removed from official history textbooks in Poland, and we were forbidden to talk about it. So what happened in Smolensk, it was a huge trauma that reconnected the nation with the whole painful history we have with Russia.
How come Donald Tusk wasn't on this plane that was so full of important people from across Poland?
There were two trips to Smolensk. One when Donald Tusk, invited by Vladimir Putin, went there. Then 3 days later, President Lech Kaczynski went there accompanied by lots of people because you don't say no to the president.
Can you explain why the plane crash triggered such a long-lasting and bitter political feud?
See, when you talk about Lech Kaczynski, you have to remember that you always talk about the team. You talk about him and his twin brother, Jarosław, the person who pretty much rules Poland right now. It's very hard to talk about one without mentioning the other. They operate as a team. As children, they acted in the movie titled Two Who Stole the Moon. And they entered politics as a team. Lech, in my opinion, was always less skilled politically. Of the two, Lech was always the front of the house, very diplomatic, was good with people, but it was Jarosław who is the politically skilled one. Of course, after the crash, the whole image of Lech Kaczyński changed. I think that people do not understand how big of a role the catastrophe played in recent political events in Poland, meaning the shift to the right.
What was the public response to the crash in the immediate aftermath?
Well, as I always say, this is our 9/11 equivalent, so it was a sense of great disbelief. I think that not only the nation, but the government was in the state of shock. Donald Tusk, the same afternoon after the crash, traveled to Smolensk and met with Putin.
Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk met with Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin. Putin remained diplomatic, saying Poland and the Soviet Union both fought against Nazi Germany, and added that the past should not be allowed to stand between them.
Tusk, there is this famous video of Putin giving Donald Tusk a hug.
Vladimir Putin, Tusk clearly taken aback by the scene.
Which really annoyed Polish people.
I wanted to say, in the name of all the Polish people, to pass the words of condolences to the family of the Polish president.
I think Tusk was really shocked and didn't know what to do. And Putin was very collected.
So Donald Tusk allowed Russia to handle the crash investigation. What was the impact of that?
Well, conspiracy theories start to circulate pretty spontaneously, I guess. The official version says that in the heavy fog, the plane hit a birch tree and a part of the wing fell off or got broken, and eventually that led to the crash. Many Poles say that this is against the common sense, that one single birch tree cannot make the plane crash. Like, the common sense was Russians did it, which is a very natural political reaction of Poles to everything.
3 months since the Smolensk plane crash, which killed Polish President Lech Kaczynski, his wife, and scores of Poland's elite, conspiracy theories continue in Poland over the disaster. The official Russian investigation, which involved unprecedented cooperation with the Polish authorities, swiftly concluded that human error was to blame, but there are some still not satisfied.
The whole spectrum, from it was an assassination, it was either Russia or some sort of cooperation between Prime Minister Tusk and the Russians, or at the very best, negligence on the side of Donald Tusk. Yes, if you want to have a fight over a family dinner, the best way to do it is to mention Smolensk, because everybody has an opinion.
Szanowni Państwo, spotykamy się tutaj jak co miesiąc.
How did Lech Kaczynski's brother Jarosław behave in the aftermath of the crash?
I'm sure it was a huge trauma for Jarosław to lose his twin brother. But let's just say that after a few months he recovered enough to change this death into a political movement in Poland. After the crash, after a few months of spontaneous mourning and gatherings in front of the presidential palace, Kaczyński's party gradually discovered the potential of the catastrophe and how it can serve them and help them to win the upcoming election. The monthly gatherings, called miesięcznice, commemorate the crash, started carrying the framed portrait of dead Lech Kaczyński. And they started to repeat it each 10th of the month. So 96 people died and we're gonna have 96 miesięcznice. So we're really talking about a few years.
Polska ziemia tylko w polskich rękach. To jest nasze narodowe hasło.
Like elsewhere in Europe, in Poland too, the far right is getting stronger.
In 2014, Donald Tusk stood down as Prime Minister in order to become the President of the European Council in Brussels. A year later, in 2015, his party in Poland lost power in a spectacular victory for the right-wing Law and Justice Party.
The Minister of Defence officially charged Donald Tusk for diplomatic treason. And the party that took power in 2015 promised that after the 96th miesięcznica, whoever assassinated the Polish president will be revealed. Of course, it led nowhere.
The original investigation blamed human error and bad weather, but the new far-right government always insisted that foul play was to blame, criticising Russia and Donald Tusk for his handling of the tragedy. I think we should make clear that Tusk has dismissed what he calls drastically unfair accusations. But has maintaining this controversy in Poland helped the far right?
Definitely reopening Smolensk investigation was one of the main slogans of the very successful 2015 campaign, which led to overwhelming victory of Kaczyński's populist right-wing party. But now the government gradually let the whole thing fade away. They understand that they're not able to prove that Smolensk is anything more than a very sad accident. People in Poland are very much divided, but the group of people that actually believe in the Smolensk conspiracy theory gets smaller, I think. It's very hard for me to say what's the percentage right now. But I think that a lot of people, including people that do not share any Smolensk crash conspiracy theories, think that Tusk didn't do enough with the investigation, or at least that he really, really wanted for it to go away.
What do you think the story of this plane crash tells us about Donald Tusk?
In 2007, Donald Tusk became the prime minister, and people really have big hopes with him. Things changed, I guess, in 2010. Donald Tusk was perceived as a good manager, someone who doesn't necessarily have any fixed ideology, which was a great relief. But Donald Tusk was always the Brussels man. Because even as a prime minister in Poland, this is what he did best, this Brussels-style, very EU-oriented politics. And him living for Brussels and leaving his party alone without leadership played a huge role in the right wing gaining power in Poland. As far as how he is perceived now, now when he visits Poland, it's like a Santa Claus, someone from a different world, the figure of hope. You know, he's in certain circles, he's more popular than ever. But let's just say this. Maybe 2010 demonstrated that he feels more comfortable in the world of the EU politics versus psychological power struggle in Poland.
So Dan, in Brussels, you've had a front seat view. What happened to Tusk's career once he took over as EU Council President?
Well, he was thrown into a series of classic EU crises. I mean, there's just constant crisis after crisis of the European Union. The first one was Russia invading Crimea.
Former Prime Minister of Poland, one of the specific decisions that he announced is that the EU is going to extend its Russia sanctions for another 6 months. Those are the
then
sanctions.
We had the immigration crisis. And he had to try and find a way through.
After meeting Turkey's President Erdogan, Tusk said that common ground is emerging for the first time.
He's found a middle way with migration, and he actually kept the EU together in response to Russia.
And to some extent, in Poland, there seems to have been this emotional outpouring on the right about the plane crash. But it doesn't seem to have touched him politically outside of Poland. Is that true?
I think that's entirely true. I mean, as we saw when he was re-elected as European Council President, it was only Poland who stood in the way. It's regarded as a sort of domestic feud, sort of particularly nasty and bitter feud.
But do you think he did make some mistakes in the aftermath? For example, allowing himself to be hugged by Putin, who was very calm and collected after the event, allowing Russia to take over the investigation?
He does learn from his experiences. He learnt from the plane crash, and I suspect he cringes at some of the things that happened. If you look at his record since then, of all the big EU figures, he's been the toughest on Putin and Russia. In fact, he's had sort of spats with Jean-Claude Juncker, the European Commission President, over Russia and his sanctions on Russia. Juncker said that people are being too hard, but Tusk has absolutely fought against that, and he's pushed the position that Russia is a genuine security threat to European Union. So yes, perhaps that's a reaction to the criticism he received at the time.
And what about Brexit? What does what you know about Donald Tusk tell us about the way he has been negotiating Brexit?
Part of his role is to be invisible for long periods, because he is there to find the compromise. So he can't be speaking out on issues unless he has the backing of the member states. So his own personal views will be hidden away to a certain extent. Of course he wants a deal. He doesn't want a no-deal situation. That would damage everybody. But it's not a deal at any cost, and that's because he regards it as simply hard Brexit or no Brexit. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a disaster.
Dan, it's been really good talking to you. Where are you off to report next?
I am going to track down Michel Barnier, I think. He's talking to MEPs in private, so I'm going to sniff around the room.
I'm going to let you head off for your hunting of politicians. Thanks, Dan. It's good to speak to you.
Take care.
After the break, filmmaker Mike Lee on the 1819 Peterloo Massacre in Manchester. The event inspired John Edward Taylor to start The Guardian newspaper. Welcome back. Now, director Mike Lee.
You could get to where the Peterloo Massacre happened in about 15 minutes on the bus from where I grew up. I mean, my father was a socialist. I have no recollection of his ever having mentioned it at all. He must have known about it. It's just one of those things. I mean, it's very, very hard. I mean, the history that is taught, that was taught, is what you might call safe history. Only 2% of the British population had the vote. Manchester, which is a big and growing industrial city, had no representation in Parliament at all. There was a great growing radical working class movement to get the vote. Peterloo was a mass peaceful demonstration, and it really was peaceful. People came out on a Monday, but in their Sunday best. They reckoned between 80 and 100,000, but the authorities were paranoid and unleashed the local amateur yeomanry who were drunk and the military. Legally, they weren't supposed to attack unless the crowd got out of hand and went on the offensive, which didn't happen. Between 15 and 18 people were killed. 300 people were seriously injured. You know, it was a catastrophe. It was 13 years until the Great Reform Act of 1832. But even then, only a very limited number of people got the vote. And of course, as we know, universal franchise wasn't to happen for another century, really. But it was a landmark on the road to democracy. The coming of the Manchester Guardian, which of course later became The Guardian, by a guy that really wanted to have an organ with which he could really deal with research and publicise the whole Peterloo issue, was a very important outcome of the of Peterloo. Well, here we are in November 2018, when, as we know, that ridiculous and chaotic historical lapse of sanity, which we call Brexit, is on the go. Nobody knows how we got here and where we're going, and it's a mess. And it is all about democracy. It's all about what people need, what people want, what people think they want, what people listening to people not listening to people being lied to, people being lied to by the authorities, people lying to each other, people's aspirations, people's hopes, people's disappointments, all of which is contained in the story of Peterloo.
My thanks to Daniel Boffey, Agatha Papeda and Mike Lee. Today's producers were David Waters, Mithili Rao and Elizabeth Cassin. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executives were Nicole Jackson and Phil Maynard. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow.